use in meditation and in our life as well. When we welcome whatever is happening, when we welcome the other people, when we welcome the feelings that are happening in our bodies and in our minds, then we can start to feel a bit relaxed already. So some of the people I recognize, some of you have been here before, so you maybe are already quite relaxed because you know your way around. But for the people who came here for the first time, do we have a few people who are at Jhana Grove for the first time? Yes. Oh, wonderful. Actually, quite a few of you. Okay. And I've already also met some people who are coming for a meditation retreat for the first time. Is that right? Can I also have a show of hands, first meditation retreat? Wonderful. Welcome. And then when with that welcoming also comes a nice little smile that actually relaxes you as well. So the topic that I chose for this retreat that we have together is beauty. And a few people have asked me, oh, well, great, you're going to have a meditation retreat. Do you have a theme or do you have a topic? And I said, yes, I've chosen beauty. And then you kind of see their puzzled eyes. They go like, what? What does beauty have to do with a meditation retreat? And I actually went online myself to kind of see, well, what do they say what beauty is? And I had a little note which got lost in the meantime. But basically what I found is that the world out there, when we talk about beauty, says that it is the pleasant feeling we get from sense impressions, from our senses. So what we can see, hear, taste, smell, touch out there in the world. And that's one type of beauty. But one definition went a bit further and also said that it isn't just what we can perceive through the senses out there, but that it is also something which elevates or which inspires the mind. So not just the five senses. And the mind in Buddhism, for you who are a bit familiar with the Buddhism, is like our sixth sense, and it's something else. And that is really the beauty we would like to focus on in this retreat. So welcome to Jhana Grove Beauty Clinic. But of course, we're not going to get any facelifts here when you go back home. By the way, though, when you read the suttas, you will see that when the Buddha talks about metta, about this beautiful quality of loving kindness, that it says the people who develop that loving kindness within their hearts, within their mind, that their complexion will also be beautiful. But what I hope we will get during this retreat is a mind lift. Have the mind be inspired. And one of the most beautiful things I at least feel, and that's what I put on the posters that you might have already seen as well, is this quote from Ajahn Brahm, where he says that real beauty actually doesn't lie in perfection. Often we think about beauty in terms of perfection. Something has to be perfect. Something has to be immaculate. Something has to be brilliant. And then it is beautiful. And of course, the normal beauty in the world that people often talk about is how the body looks. And I found it very, very interesting to see a quote of one model who was saying that she only felt beautiful in the eyes of others. So she had the beauty, the complexion, which is considered perfect or close to perfect. Well, we'll maybe be talking about perfection a bit more if it actually even exists. But she didn't feel beautiful inside herself. And I hope that during this retreat we can get in touch with the beauty which lives in our hearts and not in our appearance, and feel beautiful within ourselves. So I didn't finish the quote. So Ajahn Brahm was saying, real beauty doesn't lie in perfection, but it lies in embracing and accepting imperfection. And that really cuts to the core of the Buddhist teachings. So if you're familiar with the Four Noble Truths, the First Noble Truth basically teaches us, if we want to put it in different words, that the world is not perfect. And that the problem lies in our minds, our attitudes, in our thinking that it should be perfect. So we have a craving, we want something to be perfect. And because it isn't perfect, we get frustrated by it. So if we can drop this idea of perfection, because very often what happens as well, perfection might be there for a short period of time. And we might feel, yes, now I have arrived. Yes, now I have gotten there. But it has to be maintained. Things change. Or we see someone else and start comparing what we consider perfect with what we see in the world in someone else. And then we don't think it's so perfect anymore. So that doesn't really work. That one is something which keeps us going and going and going and going. And we never really arrive at perfection. Because perfection is something which doesn't exist. Sorry to break the news to you. But that's basically what the Buddha teaches us. But we can find a way to accept that. And to accept that in a beautiful way. And that's one of the stories that I wanted to share with you, which I also find very, very nice, that Ajahn Brahm tells for the people who know Ajahn Brahm. You might remember this story. Maybe he hasn't told it for a little while. But it just popped into my mind when I was thinking about this. So he was a young monk going to Thailand and, you know, learning the language and learning how it all works. And he was really in the whoop-whoops of Thailand. So very kind of, you know, simple, easy living. And the roads were really, really bad. But the villagers and the people looking after the monastics were very keen to help them get around sometimes, especially when you had to travel longer distances. And so they would offer the trucks that would go up and down these roads for rides. And they would take the monks in the back of those trucks. So, you know, just a bit of a tarp, maybe some kind of benchy thingy on the side of the back, or maybe not even that. And they would be sitting there and going along those roads with a lot of potholes. And every now and then, there would be a really big pothole. So, car goes down, monks go up. And there was this railing at the top with, like, strong iron bars. And they would hit their heads on those railings when the car went down and the monks went up. Now, Ajahn Brahm, being a Westerner, had a disadvantage because most of the Asian people were a bit smaller than he was, so he would hit his head a bit harder and more. But he was also mindful, and he was also trying to learn what's happening in the culture around him. And he was looking at those Thai monks that hit their heads again and again and again, and how they reacted. And he noticed that most of them smiled. Being a scientist, you know, he thought about this and tried to figure it out and said, okay, probably these guys have hit their heads so many times that they're a bit out of it and don't know how to react properly. But also being a scientist, not just thinking about things, but also figuring things out for himself, he said, okay, I'll give it a go. Next time, we go down in a pothole and I hit my head, I will smile as well. So he did. And he gathered the data and he realized that when you hit your head and you smile, it hurts much less. So the beautiful people who have taken care of their minds and who have been conditioned in this way, they will also smile and they will be able to take the imperfections of life in a much, much better way than the ones that get angry and upset and think about, you know, how you could change the cars and the roads and the whatever, you know, get really into a negative headspace. And I've realized that that is what has happened to myself over the years as well. That when I make a mistake or where something happens that shouldn't be happening as we think, that I smile much more than I used to in the past, and that I'm able to get through life much, much more smoothly that way. So, for example, I came to Jhana Grove a bit earlier to settle in a little bit and to, you know, be fresh and happy and chirpy, hopefully, when I come up here to give the first talk. And I didn't realize that in our cottage, the booster wasn't put on for the hot water. So this morning before lunch, before going over to Bodhinyana to have lunch, already in the shower, you know, put the shower on. I was like, oh no. But then I realized, oh, what's the point? Just, you know, getting all dressed and going out and putting it on and waiting for 20 minutes. Is it really such a big deal? And no, it wasn't. When I was smiley, when I was happy, when I expected that things are going to be going wrong, then I could have, it was a quicker shower than usual, I admit. I wasn't in there for like a long time, really kind of enjoying the shower. But it wasn't that cold. And that is the example that I also saw with Ajahn Brahm. And I think we all agree that Ajahn Brahm is one of those very, very beautiful beings in this world that inspires us to become beautiful as well. And he was in Newbury recently, and man, it was freezing. It was really cold for the Vesak celebration. And we don't have the buildings yet to be in, and we were outside. And we, you know, took our beanies off because we wanted to be respectful. And Ajahn gave a talk for about half an hour or 45 minutes. And my goodness. You don't feel certain parts of your body anymore after a little while. But we got a little bit of hot water. And we were sipping that hot water. And that hot water just really kind of warmed you up from the inside. And it reminded me of what kindness can do. So even if the circumstances are sub-ideal, if we get a bit of warm water, which is like this welcoming gesture, it's like a smile of another person, it's the smile we have in our own hearts, then we kind of warm up from the inside. And it does wear out after a while, I agree. But it just kind of takes this sting away from that coldness. And it also takes away the sting of life. So I hope that is one of the things that we can work on a little bit during the time we have here together. And then another story, it's also an Ajahn Brahm story, but it's one I keep repeating because I really, really like it, which we will be using for the guided meditation that we do together afterwards, is the story of the cold stone bench. Or of the cold stone even, maybe not even a bench. So we have all arrived here. We have finished what we needed to finish in our lives. I hope you were able to do that. And I hope you can leave them at home or outside, like I showed in the video with the luggage, that we don't bring all this stuff into our meditation and into this beautiful space here. That can just stay out back there. We can just let go of that. So we have come to a beautiful place like Jhana Grove here. But even this beautiful place, which was designed to be as perfect as possible, is not really perfect. So it's like the simile of the journey. So our life is a journey. And we're on that long journey and we are, you know, carrying so much stuff with us. And now we hopefully put down that stuff. I hope I can talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. But then we try to find the perfect spot to meditate. And we look around. We're in nature, okay? We're not in a build-up area now. We're in the wilderness. We are in the wild beauty that we'll be exploring together. And there is no perfect spot. But you have a look around and you find, maybe, if you're lucky, a stone bench. Or you might find a rock somewhere. And so you sit on that rock to settle down. But as we spoke before, a rock is not really made to be sitting on for a long time. So number one, the rock is very, very cold. And number two, the rock is very, very lumpy as well. So about the coldness, we can do something which also kind of makes sense scientifically. We sit down on that rock, we settle down, and we stay put. We are patient. And because we're patient, and we're not moving to another rock and to another rock and to another rock, but we sit on that one rock, we start to heat up that rock with our body heat. So that is what will happen as well when we start to settle in into this retreat. Might be a bit cold, not cold physically. We have the aircon in here, which is great, but kind of cold and uncomfortable in a sense how it feels like. Right, so that part, okay. But now, what do we do with the lumpiness of that rock? And that is something which might not make sense to a lot of you when we are talking about it. It's like a lot of the stories that Ajahn Brahm heard from Ajahn Chah didn't really make sense to him when he heard it first. But then, after a while, he realized, wow, there is so much truth in them. So the lumpiness is something we can't really do much about. But we can develop a soft and a kind and an accepting heart. And when we do that, then we will realize that gradually, bit by bit, this lumpy rock will start to smoothen out. It's like we kind of melt into this rock, or there is no kind of separation between the rock and our body so much anymore. And it starts to become more and more and more comfortable. If we carry on being kind, being gentle, and being accepting. And then after a while, we realize that that rock, which was really cold and really lumpy in the beginning, now feels almost like a sofa. It feels like a perfect spot that we were looking for, and we didn't find a perfect spot, and it's not able to be found in this world. But one thing that the Buddha and Buddhism teaches us is that we can be perfectly fine with that. But it takes time and it takes practice. But every little bit of smoothness that we can manage, that we can muster in this retreat, is important. Very often when we talk about progress, people think about these huge leaps and these huge experiences. But actually, there is this little movement happening all the time when we head into the right direction. And one day we will find out that we've actually shifted a lot when we look back over the time we have practiced. Okay, so that's just a few words of encouragement at the beginning here. And I would like to take this simile of the cold, lumpy rock into meditation together. It's always nice to start off the first night also with a guided meditation, with a sit together. Okay, so please make sure that you are comfortable. And that is one of those other myths that a lot of people have in their minds, that we have to sit perfectly straight or perfectly, you know, this or that. But actually, it's much, much more conducive to listen to your body and ask your body what is the most comfortable posture. So a chair is fine, that's what they're here for. They're not here to just have a look at, they're actually here to be used. And then also we have lots of stools and cushions and so forth that you can get from the back there to really build a little meditation nest for yourself. But also it will take a bit of time to see. And also every day will be different, so don't think if one posture works one time that it will always work. We have to be really listening and feeling out for how our bodies and our minds are. Okay, wonderful. If you have settled in a little bit, I'll also wiggle my way here. Then I encourage you to close your eyes gently. And to allow yourself to slowly, slowly land here at Jhana Grove. In this hall, with the aircon humming, with your body settling in. And in meditation, we don't really follow the senses out into the world. We let all the energies, we let all the awareness, so to speak, fall back on us, fall back inwards. Not out, but in. And meditation and the meditation retreat is not about thinking about things and figuring things out. It is about listening. It is about feeling. So see if you can really get in touch with your body. Not to have a mental concept of it, but to actually connect to the experience itself. And then what you will find, surprise, surprise, your body is not perfect. Fine. Welcome. Achy, restless, whatever. Maybe also calm, peaceful, whatever it is, body. You're okay as you are. My job is not to tell you what to do. My job is to listen, to be open, and to be kind. And with every bit of kindness, you will feel that your body changes, that your body starts to relax, that it starts to be at ease. If there is anything you can do on a physical level by moving or scratching or loosening, please do so. Your body tells you to move something, to wiggle something. Please do it at the beginning of the meditation. So that your body can deeply rest. And once we got a bit of a feeling for our own bodies as a whole, we can focus in a bit more on the individual parts. And usually when it's a bit late, I'm a bit tired and I need a bit of energy, then I do the body sweep from the bottom to the top to arouse a bit of energy. So starting with the feet, really give some tender, loving care to your feet by connecting and by caring. Welcome, feet. It's a long time since I've actually contacted you. Since I've really been in touch. What can I do to make you feel more comfortable? And then be open to see what shifts, to feel what shifts. What makes it just a tiny little bit more comfortable and at ease. Then we move up to our ankles. Let the mind settle there and rest for a while. And warm this area like we are warming the cold stone bench. And then maybe taking it even a bit more deeper by just wishing your ankles well. Then we move upwards to the shins, the calves, and feel what's going on there. Is there any pressure that we can release a bit by moving, by wiggling? And if we can't do anything physically, do it mentally, by allowing this part of the body to rest. And then we can move up to our knees. Really feel what's going on in that part of our body. And even if it's uncomfortable, making sure that we don't tense up around it with our muscles, and that we don't tense around it with our minds. Moving up the body to our thighs, and allowing them to deeply relax. Welcoming all the feelings in that part of the body. And wishing them well. And then moving up to our bottom, where our body meets the mat or the cushion or the chair. And making sure that we sit as balanced as we can. Allowing the weight of our body to be carried by the mat or the chair. We don't have to be holding on. We are actually supported. We are actually carried. So we can just let go. And let gravity do its job. then let us spend a little bit of time with our spine. As I said before, it doesn't have to be perfectly straight or perfectly this or perfectly that. Just feel what's going on. Feel what is right for your spine. What does feel good? Even if it's a bit of slumping or leaning, whatever. All our eyes are closed. This is not a beautiful spine contest. It's caring for your spine, listening and adjusting. Allowing the spine to do its thing. And then also allowing the belly to smoothen out. To be at ease. And all the other organs. From your hips all the way up into your chest. Not telling them what to do or expecting them to work in a certain way, but trusting them. That when we leave them alone, that they'll do their job smoothly and perfectly, and that they will leave us alone in turn. We give each other space. We are at peace in each other's company. And then you might notice that your chest actually opens up all by itself. Doesn't feel squashed and narrow, but it feels free and at ease. And then spending some quality time with our shoulders. Feeling into the shoulder blades. Feeling into the shoulder sockets. And allowing things to loosen up. to rest, to be at peace. And then moving into the arms from the top to the bottom. First, the upper arms, the bones, the sinews, the muscles, the skin. Allowing them to hang loose. Allowing them to settle and rest. Same with the elbows, the soft part on the inside, the hard part on the outside. Joint, giving it a break, and then moving into the lower parts of the arms. Down, down, down. Towards the wrists. And then into our hands. The palms. The backs, all the way into the fingers, right up to the fingertips. And for me, the hands are always very pleasant and tingly and sensitive. See if you can tune into that. And then give a bit of attention and care to our necks. That part of the spine. And the muscles and the flesh all around. Warming it with our kind heart. And then moving up to our heads. Feeling the back of the head, the top of the head, the two sides, left and right, including the ears. And just hanging out there for a tick. Allowing this area to be at ease. And then last but not least, our face. The eyes, the cheeks, the forehead, the mouth, and the jaw. Allowing these areas to deeply relax. And then let us feel our whole bodies once more. And compare as your stone bench that was cold and lumpy warmed up a bit. Have the lumps smoothened out a bit? I hope they have. And if they have, then you will know from your past experience or from this experience, if this is new to you, what actually works. What allows this body to slowly settle and become more peaceful and relaxed. I'll be ringing the gong 3 times soon for us to slowly and gently come out of this first meditation that we had together. Please feel free to open your eyes, to wiggle and stretch, and to come back. So usually during this first session we don't do too much because most of you probably have done so much out there already and are just happy that you arrived here. But some people came a bit earlier, and if you feel like sitting and meditating some more, please do so. But the meditation that we highly recommend at the beginning of a meditation retreat is the meditation Ajahn Brahm calls the flat-out meditation, which is called sleeping. Because we often don't give our bodies and our minds enough rest. And we need to catch up on that. And it's beautiful if we can do that in the beginning of the retreat. so we don't have to catch up later. And that will really help you to settle in more and more. And the more you settle, and the more your mind, not just your body, become peaceful, calm, clear, and still, the more you will be able to perceive the wild beauty that I was going on about. And this wild, natural beauty is very shy. So it's not like this beauty out there in the world that screams at you, eat me and look at me and listen to me or smell me. It is very shy and it is very quiet. And if we are too noisy, we actually disturb it and it goes and hides away from us. And that's why we encourage noble silence in this retreat. So I encourage you to really respect that and to try to be as quiet as possible. If something needs to be said, please do it gently and softly. If you're not used to not be speaking, and if you really, 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 really need to speak, please approach one of the retreat managers or approach us two monastics, and we're happy to have a quick chat. We also have some interviews that you can write your names down on a slot to come and have a chat with us about your practice. Or if for some reason your mind just doesn't settle and it doesn't work and you're almost kind of bursting internally, and it would be nice if you could just have a chat with someone, and the other person is happy to have a chat as well, then please just go for a walk somewhere out in the forest and have a chat there with each other, if that is something which will allow your mind to settle and to become calm slowly, because it's a process that needs a bit of time. But please don't disturb the other people, because we are in a process that is quite fragile in that sense, and it's wonderful to respect that. So I just wanted to give you one more little tool tonight before you go and sleep. The mind needs an object to settle on which is comfortable to stay for a while, and that will allow it to settle even more and relax and become peaceful and calm. And one beautiful object that I was offered on a retreat when I was a layperson myself is the focus on the Brahmaviharas, is the focus on specifically metta, on kindness, and to just have your mind rest on that kindness. And I've given you a little sheet with a chant, and that chant actually is about the four Brahmaviharas. Maybe I can spend a bit more time talking about them tomorrow. But it's something that I find quite beautiful as a chant, and I would like to do it in the evenings, usually when we part, before you go and rest or do some more meditation. And it's also something you can take with you and read again and reflect upon if you wish. But what we did in that one retreat that I did, I think it was a 9-day retreat or something, and the first 3 days we were encouraged just to come back to a mantra of metta, which in German, basically, I saw there were a few German people here, was Möge ich gesund, glücklich und zufrieden sein. Mögen alle Lebewesen gesund, glücklich und zufrieden sein. Which means in English, may I be healthy, may I be happy, may I be well. May all beings be happy, healthy and well. And when we do a mantra like that, we are not just trying to, you know, push everything else out which is in our mind. We are actually trying to point the mind in the right direction. That we develop that feeling of metta within in our own hearts. That's where, what that mantra is for. And the more that feeling starts to be kindled in our hearts and be there, the less we actually need to repeat those wishes or those sentences. You can also find sentences that work for you, that work better than what I've mentioned now. But it is something that you can kind of come back to if you are not so comfortable with just having your mind idle. Because in our life out there, so often when our mind is idle and there is nothing to do, we grab our phones and we check the messages and we check the news, or we compulsively do something and disturb that beautiful quietness that is building. So if you're used to meditation and if you're used to stillness and peace, then you will be able to stay put and go deeper and deeper into the process. But sometimes you're not. And then these mantras or thoughts are something beautiful that you can bring up in your mind. And what I really like doing is not just repeating the words and feeling the feeling within me, but actually feeling how it is moving towards myself when I share it with myself, and when it's moving out into the world to all those beings that we wish well. Anyway, that's just another tool that you can be using, and I just wish to chant that with you. I'm not sure if some of you know it already. I had to copy it from the Amarawati chanting book in England, because we don't have it in our chanting book, but I find it's a very beautiful chant. Okay, so you can try to join in if you know it, or you can just kind of listen and let it resonate in your own heart, and that will be the finish for tonight. And hope you have a peaceful sleep, and then we'll see you tomorrow. All the schedules are voluntary, so if you need to sleep in tomorrow. No, you don't have to be here at 6 o'clock. It's just a suggestion. If you have lots of energy, please come. Okay, here we go. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action. Companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such acts, they will be theirs. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. May you be happy and well. Have a lovely night. And see you tomorrow morning.